You're listening to The Point. A musical rite of the holiday season, Handel's Messiah still inspires and uplifts audiences 250 years after the death of the composer. And joining us to discuss the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra's version of Messiah being performed this week, artistic director and conductor Jung Ho Pak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Always good to see you.
Always good.
All right. So many people are, of course, familiar with Handel's Messiah. It's become a part of holiday music tradition and has been popular since it was first performed. But perhaps because of this, the performances have become massive with musicians and choirs numbering in the hundreds. And this isn't how Handel originally envisioned this.
Not at all. It was performed by just a handful of musicians, really. And when you go back to that kind of lean size, the piece takes on a completely different personality. Mm. It becomes an intimate story. Right now, I mean, of course, as you can understand, as things, as technology, I mean, technology, the nature of instruments. Back then, instruments had gut strings instead of steel-wound strings, and they were smaller, more delicate, especially the wind instruments. Sounded completely different. It's like a difference between a Tesla and a Model T. But we assume the Tesla is better than the Model T. Not necessarily. You know, there's a charm to hearing Baroque instruments. In fact, you know, if you listen to any classical music radio station, likely if they're playing Baroque music, Handel, Bach, it's probably on period instruments. That's become the de rigueur. Yeah. That's the way you hear it. So we wanted to go back to that original conception of Handel's Messiah as a precious story. And so when you go to that sound, and I bought Baroque bows for the violins, which is, gets you halfway there, the lighter sound, and we are working with a period instrument, a chorus from Boston called Convivium.
Wow.
I love that Latin with life. they're specialists in Renaissance and medieval music. And if I wanted them to be specialists, I like them to be specialists on the other end of time, before the Baroque period, because they sing in this kind of very clean, pure sound. And so they'll be joining us with four fabulous soloists.
I have to ask you about so you bring these bows in, and as a musician, you're used to playing, you're used to the sound of your instrument, and then it has this little bit, is that kind of throw them a little bit, going, whoa?
It does throw them. It's like moving from a Louisville Slugger bat to a magic wand.
Yeah, wow.
And so they have to use their arms more. They have to use more bow speed. And I liken it to putting air and breath into the sound.
Yeah.
And so it becomes much more transparent, and the words are more understood in the chorus and soloists.
So we're going to hear one of the most familiar pieces of Handel's Messiah, the Hallelujah Chorus, performed with the smaller orchestra and choir. As much as I'd like to keep listening, we have a limited amount of time here. But, you know, in a lot of ways, when I listen, these voices are like instruments as well. I mean, you're combining instruments and the vocal instrument.
That is a brilliant observation, because back in the Baroque period and coming out of the Renaissance period, really, musicians were musicians. Mm-hmm. The separation between the arts of vocal singing and instrumental singing, they were really one. They were all kind of tradesmen at the same time. And like great jazz musicians, like Ella Fitzgerald just a vocalist, but she's an instrumentalist.
Absolutely.
She stole her ideas from instrumentalists. Baroque music is very much one idea. And so that's another great thing about the way that we're going to be performing it. The separation between chorus and instrumentalists is going to be very small. They're going to be almost sitting in our laps. And so we're all one family.
Yeah. All right. Joining us on the phone is Jay Cosmos Lee. He's the concert master and violinist. Good morning, Jay.
Hello.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
All right. So first, can you
explain over there?
We're great. Explain the role of the concert master.
Well, the concert master is the leader of the orchestra, and he's sort of he or she is sort of the representative of the orchestral musicians to the public, and also concert masters were the conduit you know, of the orchestra members also to the conductor. Mm-hmm. You know, my job is to not only assist Jung-ho in his music making, but also, you know, keep an eye out on, you know, for details and other things that he might have missed. And always, so I'm kind of like the executive officer on deck, where he is the captain.
All right, so how does performing Messiah with a smaller orchestra and choir compare with working with a larger group of musicians and vocalists?
Well, obviously, because there are less number of people, there's always more attention to detail. Mm-hmm. And also, it's not just a smaller orchestra, but it's also, you know, we're playing on an A that is given a lower than a usual A440 that we would play with the Cape Cod Symphony. But I believe I can't remember if you go down to 420 or 415, but, you know, everything becomes a little bit lower in terms of, like, it loses a little bit of that brilliance. Mm. So which means we need the sort of intimacy and the sort of the technique and the kind of attention that's given. So it's not, first of all, like that orchestra doesn't get overpowered by mm-hmm. By the chorus or the singing, but that's something we can actually almost be equal in terms of the voicing.
Yeah. And Jung-ho, that's a whole different, as the audience member, that intimacy, that intimate concert is a whole different experience than when you're doing something on a larger scale.
Really, you're not looking, it's not like a Where's Waldo picture where you're trying to, you know, figure out, you know, who's got the ball. You really see that Jay is playing that melody. Mm-hmm. He is playing that melody, not one of 14 violinists.
Right.
And you could even actually pick out specific choral members as well. Mm. So tremendous amount of pride, you know. I liken it to also Jay's not only a CEO or executive officer, he's also a quarterback. Mm. I'm the coach. I mean, I'm a coach who happens to wave his arms around, but he's the person who actually gets to make sound. I don't get to make sound.
Right.
So that kind of, you see that energy between us very clearly.
Yeah, I love that energy, by the way. Some of the instruments, as you mentioned, were going to be played with period strings. You mentioned the difference between gut and steel. So what's the difference between a period and modern day string, and how does it impact the instrument? Jay, you probably want to speak to that.
Well, to be quite honest, this weekend's performances aren't being quite done on gut strings, but we'll be doing the gut string tuning. But usually gut strings are, even nowadays, a lot of period players do play pure gut strings on the A and the E string, and then they'll use a wound gut string for the D and the G string. The sound is much sweeter, and it's much, much lighter. It doesn't quite have the impact and the immediacy that a steel string or a wound a synthetic string would have in terms of just delivering the kind of sound and the volume.
Mm.
However, I think it also impacts one's use of the bow, because I mean the bows are very different in terms of that. John was talking about the broke bow, and it's actually, you know, it's curved a little bit more than a modern bow, and it's also shorter than a modern bow. So the technique actually becomes different in a sense, and sort of the accepted period practice nowadays is that, you know, you use the technique of vibrato, which is, you know, sort of wiggling and adding the juice and vibrations with the left hand to the instrument, becomes even more judicious in the sense that where if you were to play a Brahms symphony, you know, sort of the default would be that the left hand is always warm and you're always vibrating, but you know, when you're playing on you know, in a period style and a Messiah in this style, you would be very, very judicious about how much vibrato you would use. I mean, it would just become another tool for coloring, just like if it was a bow.
If I can speak to the issue of vibrato, and that's when Jay says, you know, the wiggling of the hands to shake the sound. You know, we in modern days we tend to as musicians pour it on everything like ketchup on everything. And actually, back then, the shaking of the voice or the shaking of the fingers was actually like an ornament. It was meant to be say, I love that note. I love that note. Not I love all the notes.
Right. Yeah.
So when you take away the vibrato, it becomes just a simple. And more direct.
Yeah. Jay Cosmas-Lee, concertmaster for the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra's performance of Messiah. Thanks, Jay, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on this morning.
You're welcome. All right, so we have another clip to give listeners an idea of Handel's original intimacy using the smaller orchestra and choir, and this gives also an example of the sound of the period instruments. What we're hearing.
Well, first off, that's me conducting a wonderful chorus called the Bach Collegium in San Diego, and it was my former orchestra, Orchestra Nova. And that is, of course, the chorus He Shall Purify, which is often performed in a very kind of hyper way. But I think he even writes allegro, which we literally means happy. Mm-hmm. But that's so much of Handel's music in the writing is actually doesn't mean that it's happy, but it's just more of a tempo indication. You can hear the chorus singing very passionately. This is. You know, when we say the story of Christ, we call it a passion play. And it really, I would say that's our general approach. Mindy, is that this for me is not a piece of classical music. Mm-hmm. This is and not only one of the greatest stories ever told, but it is a human experience. And what I try to do when I approach conducting this piece is taking off every single cobweb, every single piece of artifice, and asking the chorus to sing their guts out mm-hmm. on this. And I consider the star of this not the soprano or the alto or the tenor or the bass, but the chorus. Mm-hmm. I love the chorus to steal the show.
Yeah. So what are some of the instruments that we were hearing in this period?
You heard, of course, the strings and the mm-hmm. and the Baroque bows, but you also heard the harpsichord in the back, the little chunking.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, back then they didn't have a drum set to keep the tempo, and so the harpsichord, which I think one famous English conductor likened it to two skeletons making love, it has this kind of clangy quality to it, and that's the beauty of the harpsichord. I love that instrument.
Yeah, I do too. It's such a great sound. We're talking with Jungho Park, Artistic Director and Conductor at the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. We're talking about the symphony's upcoming production of Handel's Messiah. Let's hear another piece, this time performed with a larger orchestra and choir, and this piece is For Unto Us a Child is Born.
Oh,
So this really gives us an example of how flexible and nimble the choir has to be. You know, you're really hearing that.
Handel treats the choir like a group of athletes, you know, and it's just wonderful. And the relationship to jazz is very clearly there. The bebop era that was the bebop era of its time.
Yeah. It must be a lot of fun working on something. I mean, it's obviously there's a challenge, and you know you have all these little details that you have to take care of. But I would imagine it's got to be a great deal. It would feel really good to pull this all together.
You know, it's kind of like Nutcracker. You know, a Tchaikovsky, where you know some people might think we dread doing Nutcracker every year or Messiah every year. But it just happens that these are great works of art. It's like, you know, oh, you have to paint the Mona Lisa every year. You know, it's not a problem. It's a privilege to touch this great music.
Yeah. And we've got another piece here. This clip is Rejoice Greatly, O Daughter of Zion. I think we are hearing Handel's experience composing opera here. It doesn't sound a lot like opera.
Oh, completely. You know, an oratorio is basically a sacred opera without staging.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it is. The music writing is really not that different at all. You have recitatives, meaning moments in which the singer is basically speaking with pitch and accompanied by a harpsichord. And so back then in the 18th century, later part of the 17th century, the idea between secularism and religion were really melded together. Religion was actually popular, you know, and so you would get these very hyper dramatic presentations. And this is a very, very lucid storytelling. It's not oblique at all. You really feel Christ's life, and you hear all the feelings about it. It's a movie before movies were made.
Right. Talk a little bit about Handel, because people might go, he wrote operas. He really had quite a range.
He did. He was a fantastic instrumental writer. Of course, extremely successful writing operas. He was an immigrant of sorts because he was German, but made his way to England and became wildly popular, just incredibly beloved in England. And so he was really one of the very first successful entrepreneurs, composers, not under the thumb of some aristocracy or royalty, but he could really go out and make a fantastic living.
Right. So Messiah is divided into three sections. Excuse me. The first is concerned with the prophecy of the coming of the Messiah and Christ's nativity.
Right, the Christmas portion is its own.
Then we got part two, which deals with Christ's suffering and death, and the concluding section offers an affirmation of Christian faith and the glimpses of revelation. So despite the connections with Christianity, the music strikes a chord with so many people, regardless of their religious or spiritual identity. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts onto this as to why? Is it just because it's great music? I mean, there are a lot of people who are not religious at all who look at this and say, wow, it just moves me.
Well, let me just insert first that we we're doing a special Christmas version of it. We're doing almost all of the first part, the Christmas, because it's the time of Christmas. And then we're just doing a bit of part two and three. So the whole thing comes under 2 hours. But you will hear the Hallelujah chorus, however.
Wouldn't be it without it, would it? Yeah.
No, I wouldn't get out to the parking lot without an angry crowd.
You missed something. Yeah.
But to answer your question about the universality about the piece, or Beethoven's Ninth Symphony, what they share in common and what this piece is all about is not just Christianity. Of course, it is a beautiful setting of that, but it's hope. Mm-hmm. Here's the idea of a young child, a life coming into the world that will make everything better, that will set a new standard for love and acceptance and humanity. You know, I think that's why we get excited about certain presidents or certain politicians. We pin our hopes that something better will someone will have a higher standard of compassion, and I think we always hunger for that, and I think Messiah is that renewal of hope.
Right. And so you're going to be Friday, December 13th at 8 p.m. and Saturday, December 14th at 7:30 p.m. at the Christ the King Church in Mashpee.
Correct.
And then again Sunday, December 15th, 3 p.m. at the Provincetown Town Hall. Two great places to be performing this, right?
Right. I can't think of any better places because, you know, the Christ the King is opulent. Oh, it's this feeling of marble and white, pristine quality, and it is a glorious church.
Yeah.
By the way, Messiah was not premiered in a church. It was premiered in a theater, interestingly enough, and as a benefit to an orphanage's hospital. And then we're in Provincetown in this renovated, beautiful wood building. It is. And last year we went there, it was sold out, crammed with people, and you just feel like you're in this beautiful New England small town with their community surrounding this beautiful performance, and it just felt so communal.
Yeah, how is it acoustically?
It's good. It's very, because of the wood, it's very warm and very present, as opposed to kind of a more reverberant, resplendent sound in the church. Very, very different, but equally intimate.
Yeah. Now, I know that you have a press conference coming up tomorrow to talk about possibly a new home for the orchestra, is that correct?
Well, your rumors are true, and we're going to give some details about the idea that the symphony, while we have absolutely loved the Performing Arts Center that we were in, and our audiences, more importantly, our audiences have loved it, we're growing. Mm-hmm. We're growing, and the high school also has its own demands of programming as well, and so it's time right now for both organizations, or especially the symphony, to look toward a facility in which we can do more programming and do exciting programming. It's good news. Mm-hmm. It's good news. It means we're strong.
Will this be a new facility or something that's already existing?
I think we're looking at something new, something new, and that will be part of the community and help revitalize the economy in downtown areas.
Ah, we almost got something out of there, didn't we? Oh, it's always so fun to see you. And so I wanted to ask you, because that first performance, now tell me if I mess this up, John Nakamatsu?
Yes.
Okay. He was fabulous, by the way, but I have a suggestion for you.
Sure, please.
All right. You know you have the screen above the stage now, the video. Uh-huh. I think you should have a camera pointing down to the piano. Because, you know, you're trying to see his fingers, and wouldn't that be great to be able to see that on the video screen?
See, if we had, you know, that's another thing about the exciting thing of the idea of a new concert hall. You could actually build in these kind of video screens everywhere. You know, I mean, we don't want to ever be obtrusive, and I think we're well known to be tasteful. But you could put cameras in the most have a lipstick camera on the keys, for example.
Yeah, because he was amazing, and I was like, I just wish I could have seen his fingers a little better.
Absolutely, absolutely, and.
Yeah. So, are you excited about the rest of the season? I mean, you had some good things going on here.
Oh, I'm so excited. Orchestras never sounded better. We've got a fantastic concert in January around the sensuous music of Spain, and I have a flamenco dancer and a guitarist coming. And so, you know, for me, the symphony is a big playground, and the orchestra is just so flexible. They let me do. We just finished 6 sold out concerts of a Holiday Pops, where I brought this amazing band. Oh. People are talking about it. So I could not be happier.
Great. Well, we're happy to have you. It's a lot of fun. Jung Ho Park, Artistic Director and Conductor at the Cape Cod Symphony Orchestra. Thanks so much for coming in. And we'll put a link on our website here so people can get more information about the concerts. And we're going to go out here with another piece from Handel.